This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall ready to talk through the two events this week. We've got two very interesting events with the Omega European Masters on the European Tour, and we've got the third of the FedEx Cup playoff events stateside. That's the BMW Championship. Dave Tindall joins me on the line right now. Good afternoon to you, Dave Tindall.
Hi, Dave. How are you? I'm trying to sound all bright and breezy, even though we know that this podcast has already crashed once and we're both seething that we're having to record it again.
This is take two, isn't it? This is take two of the recording of this podcast.
And the first 15 minutes.
Oh, they were golden, weren't they? They were golden 15 minutes.
Award winning.
We talked about Bryson DeChambeau and his performances the last 2 weeks. We talked about the Ryder Cup and speculated about who Thomas Bjorn would pick on Wednesday afternoon. And you've missed all that, listeners.
Yeah.
That's lost and gone forever.
17 seconds did get recorded, but I'm not sure there was anything. That wasn't our best bit, unfortunately.
I was saying to you, Bryson DeChambeau's won the last 2 weeks, and what's impressed me most about his performances the last fortnight are the way he's bounced back from that collapse in the Porsche European Open, because a lot of American fans maybe didn't see that event or didn't take any notice of it. Happened late July in Germany, but he had that tournament in the palm of his hand and then capitulated late in the piece. And to produce this type of form a month on from that takes serious resolve, in my opinion. But it's not something that concerned you, Dave.
No, because I don't think he's not a player who you associate with kind of round four scar tissue. If it was someone who repeatedly couldn't get over the line, you think, oh, here we go again. I just think it was a one-off, bit of a random happening. He'd won on the PGA Tour before that. I didn't expect him to go out and win both these playoff events, but he's a very confident young man, isn't he? So it's not a surprise he's bounced back.
And the speak about the Ryder Cup, what we're talking about with the Ryder Cup, we were speculating who Thomas Bjorn would pick. We won't go into as much detail. Give us your four names for Thomas Bjorn. Those wild cards are announced on Wednesday afternoon. So if you're listening to this post 2 p.m, this bit will be redundant for you. But give us your gut feeling.
Yeah, so I think it's, you've seen on Twitter probably a lot of back and forth. I think maybe if you adopt the default position of the established stars, in which case you're going to get Poulter, Garcia, Stenson, Casey, I think that's your starting point. And then do you then squeeze someone in at the expense of maybe Sergio?
I think he's the one that would miss out, I think, if they don't go with the four established Ryder Cup players.
Yeah, because I think Stenson's injury is clearing up. I think Casey's, he's a top 20 in the world player. It's hard to sort of, for Bjorn. If they lose, I think, would Bjorn get more stick for leaving out a top 20 player in the world? They probably would, than maybe Matt Wallace.
But I don't think Thomas Bjorn won't be thinking like that. He'll be thinking not who deserves a pick or anything like that. He'll be thinking who gives me the best opportunity to win back the Ryder Cup.
I mean, I was checking, but if you check back at the Eurasia Cup earlier in the year when Thomas Bjorn was captain, I mean, he put Casey out then, so we know, and Casey won quite big with Fleetwood on day one. It won't have gone unnoticed.
Yeah.
So I think the default big four, and then to be honest, if I was picking the three most likely to come in order, I would go Peters, Rafa Cabrera, Wallace. So I've got Wallace seventh.
Yeah, yeah.
When other people are saying he's an absolute shoo-in.
Yeah, it's strange that people are saying that it's a shoo-in when he clearly isn't a shoo-in. The only thing that leads you to believe that he might get a pick is, I think you've got to go back to 2006 for the last time a player won three times on the European Tour, then wasn't selected for the Ryder Cup team. That was Johan Edfors.
Right, yeah.
So, but Bryson DeChambeau, I think, got more world ranking points for his one win last week than Matt Wallace did for his three wins combined.
Yeah.
That shows you the quality of the fields that he's been beating.
That's it. I mean, it was an astonishing performance by Wallace to win in Denmark. Birdies seven of the last eight holes, if you count the two playoff birdies. You know, and he did it when he had to do it. I mean, he's clearly a special player, but I just think he's unlucky in the sense that he'd done it in a year when there's so many candidates. Mm. I mean, the other angle as well, isn't there, is that the European Tour will want to reward someone
that's been playing on the tour,
three of their events.
Yeah,
but you know, Rafa's played quite a bit, so I will be surprised if Wallace gets picked. But if he does, anyone who gets picked basically deserves it, don't they? They've done enough.
Okay, let's talk about the two events this week, starting with the Omega European Masters on the European Tour. And Matthew Fitzpatrick is 9-1 to win the event. Thomas Peters is in the betting at 20s. Charles Schwartzel, Lee Westwood, Lucas Berger, Matt Wallace, Ryan Fox, all 25s. Danny Willett is 28-1, and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. This is a real gem as well, this one. Cran-Sur-Sierre hosts this championship, or has hosted the championship since 1972. Golf course is widely regarded to be one of the best in the world. It's a short, tight track carved into the Swiss Alps, and it's different from every other course used on the tour. Measures under 6,900 yards and plays to a par of 70. There are 5 par 3s, 3 par 5s, and a couple of drivable par 4s. And down the years, some of the tour's leading lights have triumphed at this venue as well. Four of the last 5 winners have all been top class, with Matthew Fitzpatrick adding his name to the illustrious list with his win last year when he recorded a score of 14 under par. Played slightly tougher last year than it had done in previous years as well. It's not a golf course, Dave, that can be overpowered, and strategy remains the same. Keep the ball in play, find the small greens, and have a good week with the putter, and that is the recipe for success at Cran-Sur-Sierre.
Yeah, and it certainly brings in some of the kind of shorter hitters or more people with guile and bombing. I mean, if you look at Miguel Angel Jimenez, didn't he lead after round one last year? I think he's got 10 top 10s there, including the win. He could play that course forever and a day, couldn't he? And
yep,
still have a bit of a shot at doing well. Matthew Fitzpatrick, in a kind of similar mouldish. No surprise to see him win there. He'd had a second and a fifth there. And these quirky courses, I think, do promote course specialists. So that's certainly an angle this week, I think, to look at players who've done well there before.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but I've got a couple of picks that have limited course experience. So I'm going with the I suppose the prototype golfer for this venue. And I've got two names who I think could run big races at big prices. So here's hoping, Mr. Tindall. How about
you? Go. I've just got one.
Just one pick. Okay.
Yeah.
Both my picks are 66-1, and I'm going to start off with Aaron Rye, the Englishman, as the first of my two selections. The key, as mentioned, in my opinion, is to find plenty of fairways and greens. So even though he hasn't got any course form, I thought Rye was worth a few quid at 66-1. He's been in decent enough form recently, having posted a pair of 24th place finishes in his last couple of starts on tour at the Nordea Masters and at the Czech Masters. And you'd expect him to take to Crohn's like a duck to water, really. He ranks 12th in driving accuracy, 20th in greens in regulation on tour this season, and in his latest start was first in driving accuracy and 6th in greens in reg. I think he'll thrive here, and after 3 wins on the Challenge Tour last season, he can hopefully contend for his first European Tour title this time round.
Yeah, all sounds good. Yeah, I certainly looked at Aaron Rye as someone who ticks a lot of the boxes that you need to at this course, so yeah, good luck with that.
I take it you're going with someone with more experience.
Yes, I looked at a few. I think I looked at everyone who'd had a top 10 there, but I eventually settled on Danny Willett.
Okay, 28-1.
Yeah, I mean, he has really got a excellent bank of form at this course. Won the event in 2015. Fifth the year before, runner-up 2012, 12th in 2016. Another great effort. Missed the cut last year, but obviously you can almost rule out his form the last season and a half or whatever since he won the Masters, because he had injury and then just got into that bad cycle trying to come back too soon. But we've seen some really promising signs from Danny Willett of late. Going back to the start of June, he was top 10 in the Italian Open, then he was 6th in the Irish Open, top 20 Scottish Open, 24th at Carnoustie, 18th at the Czech Masters a couple of weeks ago. So he's still thrown in the odd miscut here and there, but I think get him on this course, one of his absolute favourites, I think he's got a decent chance. I thought that, you know, he talked about needing a sharp, short game. Well, that's why basically he won at Augusta. Hits his irons great as well when he's on. Top the scrambling stats at the Czech Masters, if you just want a recent thermometer check of his short game. So I thought 28-1 was a fair price on Danny Willett on this particular very courses for horses track.
Very good. Danny Willett 28-1 for Mr. Tindall. I'm going to finish with Marcus Kinnelt as my other selection at 66-1. Whereas Rye has to prove his suitability for the course, Kinnelt doesn't, having finished 10th in Switzerland as an amateur a few years ago. And even though his form has been, I suppose, what you'd expect, Dave, from a youngster making his way on tour, it's been a bit in and out this season. He's shown enough in some big events to suggest he can fire this week, and by his own admission, he's not the longest player on tour, and he talks about his game being neat and tidy, and that's what's required around this golf course. He's finished well in some big tournaments this season, and even though he faltered late on at the Open de France to finish tied 5th, to do that on that course was no mean feat, and hopefully he can go decently at a price.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when you think of him as an amateur, most people think back to when he was leading the Nordea, but he actually, and then he fell away, but he actually came here as an amateur and kept it going and finished 10th, so yep, that was a more sort of solid performance. It gets forgotten a little bit, but yeah, I think how he's kicked on since, I think that's a big price.
Go on, give us some names that were high on the list, Dave.
I did like the chance of Ryan Fox, the Kiwi. You've got to think sort of lovely outdoor venue will suit a Kiwi. He'll love this sort of style. And he came here last year and made the top 10 on his first look. Played some great golf, didn't he, over the summer on the links. And pretty decent, I think. He tied 27th at the USPGA. So I think he's someone who can... it's interesting. It's not a course you overpower, but you look at the last couple of years and you've got Scott Hend losing playoffs and you think, really? But how does that work? But it does go to show that people like Scott Hend don't just need wide open 7,500-yard tracks. There's more to them than that. And I think it's a similar case maybe with Ryan Fox. Yes, he can hit it a mile, but he can club down, can't he? And he's got all the other elements in his game. And he's just, I think, he's so unlucky when he got beaten by Russell Knox, that he's due one, and I think this is a good chance. We're just a little bit tight on him, maybe at 25s. There's also that idea, isn't there, that the Argentines love coming to this course because there's some brilliant restaurants there.
Is that right? I'd not heard that.
Yeah, if you go on TripAdvisor, they're like the best Argentinian restaurants up there. People from the past, the Argentines that we sort of grew up watching, Eduardo Romero and Angel Cabrera, used to always go on about, you know, that was a big part of the thing for them, and they felt great there. So I think there's a little Argentine angle with that. And Romero's come into some decent form of late, having seemingly vanished for a long time. Yeah. I thought at a three-figure price, I think he's 125, he might cause a little bit of a stir. Maybe look at him for round one betting as well.
I quite like the look of Alexander Bjork as well, to bounce back from a couple of miscuts. One of those admittedly was in the USPGA Championship, so that can easily be forgiven. The other one in the Nordea Masters. But when you think about sharp, short games, his name immediately pops to me, Alexander Bjork, and he finished 16th on his debut here last year. I thought he could go well. And given you were taking some skinnier prices in better fields about Alexander Bjork earlier on in the season, I thought 50s was reasonably fair on him as well.
Yeah, it's funny how he sort of drifted back to that sort of price. Because yeah. I don't think he'll be quiet for long. Another Scandinavian who's in great form, Lucas Bjerregaard.
Yeah.
He's had two top tens on the bounce. He had three top tens on the bounce earlier this season. So he can string these big performances together.
And he had an unbelievable ball striking round week last week, and just the putter let him down on Sunday.
Yeah, so if he can just hold a few more, then he's in good nick. But again, he's a bit short, isn't he? It's hard to back him at 25s if Bjork is 50s, I would say.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Okay, then, let's talk about the BMW Championship, the third of the FedEx Cup events. And Dustin Johnson is the 8-1 favourite here with William Hill. Justin Rose is in the betting at 10-1. Brooks Koepka is 14s, along with Bryson DeChambeau. Justin Thomas is 14-1. Rory McIlroy is 16s. Hideki Matsuyama, 18-1. And it's 20-1 and bigger the remainder. I thought this was quite a difficult championship to get a handle on, Dave, from a betting perspective, because got a new course to contend with here. Well, a new old course, shall we say, with Aronimink hosting this championship. I did host the 2010 and 2011 AT&T National, but it appears the course will play very differently to the last time we saw it, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Donald Ross. It's a par 70, we know that. When I did read about what they'd done with the sort of restoration, they said that they were trying to get it back to a more how Donald Ross intended it to play. So you've certainly got some Donald Ross tracks. They were on one, weren't they, only a couple of tournaments ago at the Wyndham. So you've got that angle to look at. I've got a tremendous angle, though, on this.
Have you? I'm looking forward to hearing that. just a bit more about the renovation. The bunkering has increased, so the fairways are framed a little bit more, and they might play a little bit wider than they did when Aronimink hosted the AT&T National back in 2010 and 11. And the greens have been expanded to allow more hole locations as well. And you mentioned that course correlation with Donald Ross, responsible for Sedgefield Country Club, which does host the Wyndham. Eastlake is another of his designs. That's the home of the tour.
So
if you play well this week, you can maybe build a little bit of, not momentum, but you can maybe feel a little bit of confidence going into the Tour Championship next week. And he also designed Plainfield Country Club, which hosted the Barclays in 2011 and 2015. So those are potential course correlations this week. And the golf course is designed to play fast and firm, but thunderstorms are forecast for the first couple of rounds of the tournament, which might make this less strategic than Donald Ross possibly intended, perhaps.
Yeah, possibly. It's hard to know, isn't it, with the weather forecast? But the angle I've got...
Go on. This better be good now, Dave.
I think I've got this right. It's basically, it's nothing particularly to do with the course. It's just the idea of people playing well in the playoffs and keeping it going.
Yeah.
Now, I looked at the 11 winners of this event, and 10 of them had a top 10 in the first two events. Mm. 7 had actually had a top 3. So that's,
all right, okay.
So it's very strong. I mean, I've counted them all out. There's 18 players who've had a top 10 in the first two playoff events, which doesn't exactly narrow it down, but it helps. I mean, it's 18 out of 70. So
you basically, you're not expecting someone to find form this week?
No, because, I mean, we've got 11 years of evidence, and 6 times the players won back-to-back in the playoffs, 9 times the players won 2 of the 4. I think it's just a very simple, obvious trend, and I think it's well worth following, because I think if you try and get too clever in these, I think you sort of can go around in circles. It's a very obvious thing to do, but pick someone in form.
I'm doing exactly that. I've got one pick,
good.
Dave.
Yeah, me too.
40-1. I'm going to go with Cameron Smith as my pick.
Perfect. He's the poster child for what I've just said, isn't he? Because he's had 2 top 3s in these playoffs.
He has. He's the hot hand at the moment. And I think we either said it on this podcast or the podcast we recorded earlier. You mentioned it. Going with the hot hand has been beneficial with Billy Horschel a few years ago, Bryson DeChambeau, the most recent one, of course. And Smith has finished third the last 2 weeks, the Northern Trust and the Dell. What I like about Smith is, as well, he's had 10 rounds on Donald Ross Designs. And he's impressed in those appearances on these types of courses. And his tie for seventh at the Wyndham in 2017 really shines like a beacon here, because it came in the middle of a string of missed cuts. So that one leaps off the page. And his all-round game has just been in fine order. And I think this shorter course will suit him as well. He's not one of the big young bombers, but he's got an all-round quality game. And he's been putting sensationally well recently as well. So I'll take a chance with him. Maybe a little bit skinnier at 40-1 than I would have liked, but Cameron Smith is my sole selection for this event, Dave.
Yeah, jolly good. Well, I've got an Aussie as well, actually. I'm going to go for Adam Scott.
33-1.
Yeah, maybe it's no bad thing to have an Aussie, because we had an Aussie winner of this last time in Mark Leishman. We've seen Jason Day win two of the four playoff events in 2015. Adam Scott himself won the Northern Trust in 2013. So the Aussies have done well at this stage of the season. I don't know whether they grew up as children playing well at this time of the year, maybe in Oz. But Adam Scott, obviously we saw him make a big run, didn't we, at the USPGA, where he eventually finished third, closed 65-65-67, came out and added another top five in the Northern Trust. So he really has been playing some fine golf. Took a bit of a backward step at the Dell Technologies last week, 49th, but he did close with a 66, so maybe just ironed out a couple of faults that crept in. So if he can hold the putts. I mean, he was fourth for putting average at the Northern Trust. Didn't quite have his putting boots on last week, but if he can get it back, I think he should go well on this course. I mean, back in 2011, we saw that. Although it might play differently, I still think it's a lot of that will still be similar how it played then. He was third on his one start at Aronimink in 2011. So I think Adam Scott's got that nice bit of course form in the bank. He's got the current form as well. And I think he's just got that extra desire to get a win under his belt. It's been a while. I just think he'll be pushing really hard, because he knows he's close. He's got two top fives in his last three starts. I think it could be a big week for Adam Scott, where just a bit of an opening for him. And it's worth saying as well, isn't it, that whoever wins this week could well win next week, based on his history in the playoffs and the fact we go back-to-back Donald Rosses. So that's a sort of little tip ahead for next week, maybe.
Indeed.
And Adam Scott has won at Eastlake, of course, so that adds all ties in.
Okay, Adam Scott, Dave's solitary selection for the BMW Championship. So a couple of Aussies there for you maybe to have a look at. Cameron Smith and Adam Scott. Who came closest away from those two, Dave?
Well, I was thinking about Hideki Matsuyama, because he's sort of slowly coming back to the boil week by week, tournament by tournament. And had a chance, didn't he, last week? But we've really ducked him at 18, so that's kind of put me off a little bit there on him. Jason Day does like another Aussie. He does like these sort of courses and sort of mixes some brilliant play of late with some really strangely poor play. But he could go well at 20s. I think Justin Rose, but again, he's another one we've ducked. He won one of the two AT&Ts at Aronimink, runner-up last week. Every chance he wins as well.
Yeah, I quite liked the credentials of Bubba Watson this
all
week.
Right,
He's got a very good record on Donald Ross tracks, Bubba Watson, and he played really well last week to finish seventh, despite not putting to the best of his ability. I think that's always the Achilles heel. Every time he puts, it looks uncomfortable, doesn't it, Dave? They just dribble in the over the front lip if they do go in. But he closed 67-66, and he was third in strokes gained tee to green last week. Three-time tour winner this season as well. I think he's maybe been a little bit overlooked at 50-1, Bubba Watson. And Webb Simpson, who plays the Donald Ross Designs so well, particularly at Sedgefield, he was the 36-hole leader before capitulating over those final two rounds. That was such a brutal collapse, Dave. That was enough to put me off him.
Yeah, I think so. You wonder where that came from. I mean, he's won the Players this year. You would have thought he had the
staying power. Bizarre how badly he tailed off.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a concern. But in terms of your Bubba bet, he's one of the 18 players who have had a top 10 so far in the playoffs. So he would a tick there for Bubba.
One player that hasn't had a top 10 so far in the playoffs, Tiger Woods, Dave.
Yes.
What do you think's his chance?
I think he's saving it all for East Lake.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
No, my concern with Woods, I don't know if you share these concerns, Dave. He's playing quite a lot of golf, isn't he? Do you think that's going?
Do you think fatigue?
Yeah. Do you think fatigue is going to be a factor for Woods? I mean, well, he's only been back a few months, hasn't he? Really, 6 months, and he's playing the most golf he's ever played in terms of tournament golf in his career, probably.
Yeah. It's a fair point. I mean, have you looked closely at his numbers? Are they just getting worse? Or
well, he just struck me that on Sunday. I mean, the light wasn't shining as brightly at the end of Monday's round, as it may have been. He declined to speak to the press, didn't he, after that round on Monday? I think he was that frustrated, having not got into contention because he was striking the ball so well. But you mentioned to me, I think it was in the office, not on the podcast, that you thought the putter might let him down last week. And in the end, it did, even though he putted well in the first couple of rounds.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's got less recovery time as well because that finished on Monday. And in his pomp, he used to play, 15, 16 tournaments a year. So I don't know. I don't know enough about his back and what the actual truth is. I mean, if it's in pain, will he sort of gloss over it? Or is he genuinely not in pain with it? Only he knows, really. But
I think there'll be a fair bit of mental fatigue as well with Woods.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, I suppose you could argue he was 40th at the Northern Trust. He was 24th in Boston, so he did improve.
Yeah.
I just think maybe it ties in. Maybe he needs some adrenaline to sort of kick in, and I think maybe that will most at the East Lake.
Yeah, and he needs a good finish here, though, doesn't he? I think, is he just inside the top 30 at the moment, Woods? I think. And East Lake is a fortnight away as well, isn't it? There's a week gap in between the BMW and East Lake, which will be beneficial, I think, for him.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Mr. Tindall, are we done and dusted here?
Well, I hope so. We've been yattering for about an hour, if you count the one that never was.
thank you for your company, Dave. If you want to follow Dave on Twitter, @DaveTindallGolf is his Twitter handle. You'll have plenty of Ryder Cup chat on there. And if you want to follow me, it's @D Kellner. And make sure you check out the betting on the William Hill website and on the app ahead of the BMW Championship and the Omega European Masters. Thank you once again, Dave, for your company.
Thanks, Dave.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening. And we will be back next week.